I wrote my head coach a letter and I dropped it off literally at his house. I was like, I'm quitting and this is why. And I told him a lot of things. You set this program up and this is on your foundation, and it's kind of screwed me over mentally, physically, spiritually. And then the second part of the letter was, on the other hand, I don't feel worthy to be the senior on this team. I don't feel worthy to be the spiritual leader, and I don't feel worthy to be that. He didn't let me quit. He brought me into his office and encouraged me. And actually, he apparently had it in his clipboard all through his senior year. After we won, he brought it out to me. I was crying with my family hugging and stuff. And he brought it out. He was like, Emma, I just want you to know, this letter has been in the back of my clipboard every single practice, every single game. And then I'm like weeping, of course.
I am Emma Morris and I am undone.
Hey friend, I am glad you're here. If this is your first episode, welcome. I hope you love it. I hope you stick around. I hope you go back in time and binge the episodes that came before and get inspired by the high achievers who didn't let failure stand in the way of eventual victory. And if you're a regular, thank you. I've learned a lot about achievement and resilience and grit in these past nearly 11 months, and I couldn't have done it without you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. That said, welcome to yet another episode of Becoming Undone, the podcast for those who dare bravely, risk mightily, and grow relentlessly. I'm Toby Brooks. I'm a certified athletic trainer, certified strength conditioning specialist, and a professor of rehab science at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Over the past two decades, I've grown more and more fascinated with what sets high achievers apart and how failures can frequently be the necessary steps on our path to success. Each week on Becoming Undone, I invite new guests to examine how high achievers can transform from falling apart to falling into place. I'd like to emphasize that this show is entirely separate from my roles at Texas Tech, but it's my attempt to apply what I've learned and what I'm learning and to share with others about the mindsets of high achievers. For Lubbock, Texas native Emma Middleton Morris, basketball became a passion early in life. However, being a homeschool kid meant that her path to college sports would be anything but ordinary. She committed to the work, eventually becoming an All-American her senior year in high school and signing to play at Division II Lubbock Christian University. In college, a lackluster freshman campaign led to a successful and work-filled offseason. But when that didn't result in playing time or meaningful contribution on the floor, she strayed. She even tried to quit basketball altogether before her senior year, when her coach encouraged her to come back. Her team went undefeated, captured their second straight national championship, with Emma anchoring the post and garnering All-American honors in the process. With a super senior COVID year in her back pocket, she decided to return for a fifth year, only to be told there was no longer a spot for her. Undeterred, she entered the transfer portal and days later realized a lifelong dream of signing to play D1 basketball at Abilene Christian. Hear Emma tell her story of unexpected plot twists, of heartache and darkness, of redemption, and eventually a days-long courtship in episode 58, Letters with Emma Middleton Morris.
Now, gang, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you I'm super excited about this one. I've been a huge fan of Emma Middleton for a long time. No longer Middleton, now Morris. But Emma has a storied basketball career and one that was full of highs and lows, and that's certainly part of what we examine on this show. So Emma, welcome. So glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm honestly so excited to be on here.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to dig into your basketball career and your athletic pursuits. But before that, I always start with a little bit of a softball. What did you want to be growing up and why?
Okay, I like it. So when I was little, I always thought I would be a doctor or a nurse, and then it kind of morphed into physical therapist as I entered college. I started as a biology major, totally just trying to chase that dream. And then in the middle of biology two, I made through biology one pretty good, but biology two kicked my booty. So I had to switch my major pretty hard and fast.
Understood. Well, I think lots of times we don't really fully understand what we're signing on for when we're young like that. So
that's very true.
So I know a bit of your story, but our listeners perhaps don't. So I always have my guests start at the beginning, wherever they would define that for themselves.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. So I was homeschooled all growing up. I'm the second of four kids. We're a very close-knit family. We grew up in Lubbock, so we had, I don't know if you have any homeschool listeners, but there's a pretty good community of homeschoolers in Lubbock, Texas. So there's a lot of opportunities for sports, for random little science classes or whatever you want to take. So we had a pretty good community there, even though we were homeschooled. Get a lot of flack from that from my teammates and stuff. But yeah, so that was kind of how we started. I was raised in the Baptist church. Very involved, parents, loving. It was a good environment. I was a little bit of a rebel all through my childhood, probably through till now. I guess that's just who I am. But yeah, I think I gave my parents a run for their money for sure.
Well, that's funny. I had heard your story shortly after we joined. We also attend Highland. And your dad had mentioned that you were homeschooled and considered going D1 and eventually ended up at LCU. So talk me through the latter portion of your high school career and how the decision was made to go to Lubbock Christian University.
Yeah. Okay. So one of my previous teammates on our Lubbock Titans high school team had committed to go to LCU. Her older sister had also transferred there. So let's see. That did affect me somewhat, but I wasn't trying to follow. I wasn't really one of those followers in general, to a fault, probably. Just having that kind of familiar person there helped me. I had gone to camps, all sorts of summer camps and things at LCU. They had a really good reputation for having a good women's basketball team. Their program's really good and strong. So I liked the idea of winning, so that right. definitely played into my choice. Yeah, so I played, let's see, like club ball through my last 3 years of high school. Got a lot of exposure, talked to a lot of people. I mean, all sorts of letters coming in. But honestly, I'm kind of a homebody, so I wanted to stick around. I was holding out for tech, and they finally told me that I couldn't get money. They said, we'll give you a walk-on, honorary walk-on. And I was like, no, thank you. So I ended up going with LCU.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that, so I went to a really small high school and not a homeschool, but a small school. And for me, there was always this kind of lingering doubt. And you played club ball, maybe some AAU or something of that sort. So you probably had a bit of a feel for how you stacked up against better competition. What was your mental approach to playing? This is D2. You had aspirations of going D1. Where were you mentally with regards to the confidence and how you stacked up against some of the better talent?
Well, that's a funny story, because in high school I was very confident. And I figured that would kind of transition into college, and that was where my head was at. There was where my heart was at. And then I show up at college, and something about the environment, the social environment, the girls coming in with me. I mean, I had played against and with some of the freshmen that were coming in with me to that team throughout high school. But something about them being my teammates, it just destroyed my confidence. And I'm kind of a people pleaser, so I didn't want to step on anybody's toes. I didn't want to outshine people. And it just completely... My confidence was on ground zero. That's all I'm kind of telling you with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it went from night to day, honestly.
Yeah. Well, your bio is certainly impressive. All national honors as a senior, Lone Star Varsity Super Team. So for those not from Lubbock, that is a citywide all-star team. Averaged a double-double, 14.8 points, 12.6 rebounds a game. Homeschool National Junior Player of the Year. Again, you showered with these accolades, but you're not a McDonald's All-American. So there's kind of this lingering question of, okay, yeah. And my son deals with this at Lubbock Christian, where
right.
he wonders, like, okay, we're good, but are we UIL good? Are we, you know, 6A Texas good? Are we nationally relevant? And so talk me through going in. You said you were fairly confident. Did you feel like you had what it took to play D1 basketball?
I honestly did. You can hear my husband in the background. He's interacting with you as much as I am. I think I was probably more confident than I even should have been. I had a really good camp experience at Tech, and I got some just like key moments, you know, when you're in the moment and you're trying to size yourself up against some of the girls, and whether it's in club or camp or on your own high school team or whatever, you're always trying to get a leg up. And so when I was sitting there getting several legs up, like in a row, I'm like blocking this 6'4" girl, and I felt like I could compete. It was an ego stroke for me. But when I got in around the girls at LCU, I just lost it. I think it was just kind of a reality check that, oh, I'm a freshman and there's a hierarchy here. Like, get in your place, kid, kind of thing.
Well, I know that the 4 years was certainly up and down for you. And I don't necessarily know the details, but you struggled with your self-esteem and your confidence was shaken and wondering who you were as a player and who you were as a believer, as a young person sorting through, okay, this was mom and dad's faith and now this is my faith. So Talk me through up until that senior year, what were the high points and low points of that aspect of your journey?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll just go by year. I think freshman year for me was pretty self-deprecating. I think I came in with confusion kind of on like, where do I stand, as most freshmen would. But when I started lining myself up and I wasn't anywhere close, I didn't play my freshman year hardly at all. So it was just kind of one of those, oh, this is where I belong. And throughout that whole year, I got farther and farther down on just myself and my abilities. I thought about quitting at the end of that year. And my coach brought me into his office and he was like, hey, man, we brought you in here on full scholarship. Like, you got to start showing up and practice and stuff or else we're going to have to replace you. And that kind of put some fear in my pants. So that whole summer after freshman year, I got in the gym. I was just lifting weights constantly. I regret that summer a lot because I think it took my brain and twisted it into a machine almost. I don't know how else to say that. I just was like, this is my only way to make it, so I got to make it.
Full stop. This is a powerful insight from an incredible performer. Although you're just starting to hear Emma's story, and we'll get to the rest of it in a sec, I know how it ends. Emma had what she would tell you was a disappointing freshman campaign. An honest and probably frightening conversation with her coach came next, so she set herself to the work. But in her words, today, she would say that she regrets that summer? To be completely honest, I've been really struggling with this idea for the past few months. I was an 80s kid. I bought into the idea of working your way to victory, hook, line, and sinker. The Rocky movies, the 1980 Miracle on Ice team, Rudy, the American dream, the idea that anyone can achieve anything if they just work hard enough. But I'll be honest with you. I used to believe this idea unconditionally. I used to preach this to my kids and my students and anyone who would listen. The notion that all it takes is a giant-sized dream and a work ethic to match and you can accomplish anything.
Have you ever had a dream that you want him to do you so much you could do anything?
As a matter of fact, kid, I have. Or at least I think I have. But after a few years of being humbled, of being certain that the formula of accomplishment being a compulsory and God-given right earned through the currency of hard work was true 100% of the time, I think about this clip probably more than I should.
Your grandfather saved all of his life to bring the family to this country. He got a good job in the stockyards. He had a nice little house in South Chicago. I was about 12. Somebody sold him on the idea he ought to move to the country and become a dairy farmer.
He's dead, man.
Wait. He you buy some land, you know, and get a couple hundred cows. Within 5 months, every one of those cows was dead with disease. It was the depression. Couldn't sell the land. There's no work. So one day, he took off. Didn't come back. My brothers and me, we split up to live with friends and relatives. Chasing a stupid dream causes nothing but you and everyone around you heartache. Notre Dame is for rich kids, smart kids, great athletes. It's not for us. You're a Rudiger. There's nothing in the world wrong with being a Rudiger. You can have a damn nice life.
When I first saw the movie, I thought Rudy's dad was a dream-squashing monster, an unsupportive parent who only had his own interests in mind when he tried to talk his son from hopping a bus to South Bend to try out for the Fighting Irish. The thing is, we celebrate Rudy. And while his story is one of inspiration, not to mention one of my favorite movies, the older I get, the more I see the wisdom not in Rudy's never-quit attitude, but rather in Rudy's dad's counsel. You can have a damn fine life being a Rudiger. But while my experience has at times made me see the wisdom in Rudy's dad's experience, the achiever in me desperately wants the optimism and the unrelenting commitment to achieve that we see in his son. So young Emma was a Rudy. When faced with adversity, she knew that she could either complain about it or work through it. She chose the latter, and it paid off for a while.
And so I did. I transformed my body and was in the gym all the time. And then I came in with a lot more confidence. So like you said, the roller coaster of self-esteem and stuff. Sophomore year, I show up looking jacked. No, not really. And coach brought me into the office and was like, yeah, we're going to start you. You're going to play a lot if we don't start you, but you're looking good. And I'm feeling good about myself. Go in and don't get started. You know, if preseason happens, I'm like, oh, well, maybe he's just not playing me right now, but he's planning on playing me in the season. But just the mind games for days, I'm telling you. Probably it's like that at any program. So I dealt with that, and then my confidence got taken away again. Junior year, I kind of lost myself a little bit. I think sophomore year kind of kicked me because I had the hope. And I had worked hard, and I was like, well, if you're the good girl, you're saying yes, sir, you do the extra work, you get in the gym, you know, that should pay off, right? Like, it should. And I was doing all those things. I guess I gave up on all that and kind of was like, well, screw it. If being the good girl doesn't get you playing time, let's try something else. So I really suffered in my spiritual wellness, my mental health. I got in a wrong crowd, started having some worse friends, got into stuff I shouldn't have gotten into. And kind of simultaneously with that, I started playing. It was halfway through season, and he just put me in. And I started doing really good. I got a lot of stats, started getting awards and stuff. And I'm like, oh, so this is how you do it, kind of. And it just was a negative reinforcement for me to just jump in with 2 feet into that lifestyle pretty well. Yeah, so, I mean, that pretty well took me to the rock bottom of my life and my spiritual journey pretty fast. It was a downward cycle pretty fast. And I was in a car wreck. I just got dumped by my crappy boyfriend, you know, all the things. And I guess the Lord just used that opportunity of me being at my lowest point to kind of wake me up. That was right after my junior season. COVID shut us down that season. We were on our way to hosting regionals, and it got canceled the day before. So threw a wreck in my plans, you know, my futile plans, of course. So yeah, that was kind of how I got to my senior year. I mean, the Lord woke me up. Yeah.
Right. Did you reach a point where you kind of knew that this was it? This is no further. Like, this is as far as I'm going. I'm building up from here. Or was it maybe less poetic than that? Was it more of a process?
Yeah. I mean, I think I hit that point, but it didn't point me towards goodness. I hit that point and I was like, this is it. This is as low as you can go. You know, this is, I hit that point actually twice. I remember the specific moments and it pointed me towards, okay, so if I can't go any lower, like, what's the point in keeping on going in the first place?
Right.
So just by the grace of God, like, I made it through those, both of those moments in my life. But yeah, I don't think it was much of a, okay, now I'm going to stand up, tighten my belt and keep trucking. Like, it was more of a, I give up, I'm not doing this anymore. And the Lord pulled me, you know, he did the work. I didn't really turn around. I didn't do the action of, oh, I got to shape up my life. I really didn't. And it's kind of sad to say that, but the Lord, also not sad, because you can just see how evident and powerful the Lord is and how caring and compassionate. But yeah, like I said, he did it all.
Sure. Well, I teach a behavioral medicine class for our athletic training students, and we were talking today about how Texas Tech has 3 sports psychologists on staff. So student athletes who are dealing with anxiety or depression or performance issues, they can go in and there's no stigma attached to that. It's a normalized part of care. Like, if you sprain your ankle, you see the athletic trainer. If you're not feeling right psychologically, you go see the sports psychologist.
You're
at a Division II school, and typical. It's no criticism of LCU. It's just this is a growing field. Where was your mental health during this season, and how did being an athlete either hamper or help that aspect of it? Did you feel that stigma associated with, I'm tough, I'm strong, I can't get help, or were you just kind of spiraling on your own?
Well, to be honest, I think it probably helped and hurt a little bit. I think it helped because I was already in a community, and it was like a built-in group of sisters, kind of, honestly. Granted, I think I had pulled away from them just in my own mental health. Like you said, how is your mental health? It was isolating, and I had pulled away so hard to a point where I had kind of blocked off some of my friends, and one of my very dear friends, actually, I reached out to her at a pretty low point. I had been going to counseling every once in a while, but like you said, it's a D2, not a lot of, I mean, no hate on them, but I probably had access to it. I just wasn't really being purposeful about getting on top of my mental health and whatever. I reached out to a buddy of mine, and she didn't really know what to do or say, so she actually reached out to our head coach, and I was, you know, summoned in. It was kind of an intervention kind of situation, which could have gone one of two ways. It could have gone great, and it could have steered me toward goodness, but it didn't. It just kind of drove me away, which, no, I mean, what's a person supposed to do? It wasn't good. Yeah. I wasn't on medication, and I wasn't really on top of it.
Right. Well, through all that, and almost in spite of how you had behaved, in spite of, you know, you said it yourself, you were locked in, and the results were sit on the bench.
Right.
And then you just let it go, and the results were, I'm part of the rotation. Right. So that message is so confusing and confounding. I have to think that the thought to transfer or the thought to quit altogether, what kept you going during that season that allowed you to enter your senior year as, little did you know, a key member to a historic team?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I did actually try to quit. Not a lot of people know that, but so I came back to Jesus. I actually got rebaptized, got plugged into a different church, not my parents' church, got in a D group and all the things. And I felt just like discouraged about basketball. I felt encouraged in every other part of my life and everything was headed up, but I was like, but basketball is just not going right. So like, I felt like maybe it was a part of my downhill progression, because I did get so much more playing time when I started. Anyways, so yeah. Moral of the story, I wrote my head coach a letter and I dropped it off literally at his house. I was like, I'm quitting and this is why. And I told him a lot of things, you know, they were all true to me at the time. But in retrospect, I'm like, oof, I was pretty hard on him. And everybody has a responsibility to do the right thing, but nobody's perfect. So I think I was just kind of letting out, look, you set this program up and this is on your foundation, and it's kind of screwed me over mentally, physically, spiritually. And then the second part of the letter was, on the other hand, I don't feel worthy to be the senior on this team. I don't feel worthy to be the spiritual leader like I would want to be. I'm at this point, like, I'd love the Lord and I'm chasing after him. And if I am involved in a program, I'm going to try to do it with all my heart. And I don't feel worthy to be that example for other people after what I did last year. So yeah, I gave that to him. He didn't let me quit. He brought me into his office and encouraged me and said, you know what? I think a lot of these things are true, and I'm just grateful that you're open and honest with me. So he took it really well, like a champ, and he convinced me to stay on. So I continued. And actually, crazy part about that letter, he apparently had it in his clipboard all through senior year. So I didn't know that, and I kind of held some grudge about that. But then after we won that year, he brought it out to me. I was crying with my family, hugging and stuff. When he brought it out, he's like, Emma, I just want you to know, this letter has been in the back of my clipboard every single practice, every single game. And then I'm like weeping, of course, but yeah, random letter story.
Yeah. So we get to that senior season, and you don't know what to expect. You go from high school All-American to end of the bench as a freshman, confidence shaken, then doing the wrong things and being rewarded for it. Now you're a senior. Now you're regarded as a leader. Let's look at the stats here. Played and started all 23 games, averaged 25.7 minutes per game, 13.2 points, 5.7 rebounds, shot 52% from the field, including 32% from three-point range, 81% from the line, 18 double-digit scoring games. Your team goes undefeated, wins the national championship. You're an All-American. Storybook ending, right? What isn't said in all of those accolades? What was that season like for you and the days and months to follow?
Yeah. You'd probably hear that and be like, oh yeah, she finally hit it, like, happily ever after. But it wasn't really like that, honestly. And what story ever is, except for Christ's story, obviously. Until we get there, we're not really happily ever after in any situation. That was a pretty lonely year for me. Like I said, had kind of lost my friends, and the whole debacle of me reaching out to my close friend and she went to coach. I felt betrayed and all the things. So I pretty well, I was friends with them, and I still keep in touch with several of them, and I love them dearly, but I just wasn't close. I tried several times. I'd walk over there and we would do a Bible study every once in a while, but I was just kind of lonely. I don't know how else to say it. Just not really connected to anyone, really. I had a few freshmen and a sophomore that I was just dearly trying to love on and do my best to feed into goodness and stuff, but not really any of the seniors that I had walked through, which I'm now pretty close to a couple of them. But anyways, at that time of my life, it was pretty lonely. And I think throughout off the court that year, I strove after the Lord. I grew in him. I was learning rapidly about things that I had completely ditched. Like, I knew it growing up, but I had ditched it completely. And so relearning some of those things of just like, who am I? What's my identity? What am I here for? How should you interact with the mission field? How should you interact with friends and boys? All the things, just trying to relearn all that. And so it was a pretty intentional time of growth for me off the court. And then on the court, it was, I don't even know how to explain it. It was effortless. It was just like the Lord had given me this joy, and it was hard in a way because You want to have those close friendships that create chemistry and have two-way kick and give and go transition buckets. I didn't really have that closeness with them. However, being isolated was kind of the best thing for me on the court because I wasn't in a clique. I wasn't avoiding passing to one girl because so-and-so said something about her boy. I wasn't in on any of that. And so I was able to play freer. I was able to just lean into the things that I had never really tried, like hook shots and like dribbling up the court a little bit. I had always been too scared and too conscious of, oh, what is so-and-so going to think? And she's the point guard. That's her job. And I can't do that. Like, just kind of not really caring about what they thought and just being able to tap into some stuff that was new to me at that time, which was really, really sweet to look back on.
For sure. Being able to play free like that is just, I think a lot of times we can be prisoners of our own minds and our own expectations. Mm-hmm. And if you're a people pleaser, oh, you know, they fed it to me and they didn't get the assist out of me. And all the things I shouldn't be focused on in the midst of a game, I'm now thinking about, oh, I missed my last two shots, or, oh, you know, they scored on me last time down the floor. If you can just play free and uninhibited and just in the moment be where your feet are,
right,
then you can produce. And you saw the evidence of that. So a storybook season. All of the accolades, the national championship, and now you've got this COVID year. And you as a super senior have an opportunity, you and your teammates, hey, run it back. Let's go do it again. But that isn't how it unfolded. As an NCAA All-American, you aren't necessarily invited back. Talk me through what that super senior season and process was like for you.
Yeah. Okay, so right after season, coach gave us 2 weeks to celebrate, enjoy ourselves, whatever. I took the 2 weeks and did not touch a basketball. I was chilling. I kind of thought after that game, I'm done. And I had soaked up all the memories. I processed all the feelings of, this is my last pregame. This is my last practice. This is my last warm-up, whatever. And so I kind of processed all that, and I was like, I'm done. But through those 2 weeks of being off and not touching a basketball, I was just like, this can't be all. This can't be all. I just finally got a taste of what it can be. And after all my life of putting myself through drills, getting in the gym after whatever, even in junior high, like, just my whole life is this. Why quit 1 year before I have to, right? So I go into coach. We have our team meetings or whatever, individuals, and it was me. And then I go into coach's office, and there's like three other people in there, two assistant coaches, his wife was in there. And I was like, oh, wow. So they're really saying goodbye. But I had prepared a little speech in my head saying, I want to come back. You know, he had just shown me that letter and it filled me with joy. I was like, okay, me and Gomez can be like buddies. This season will be great. And that had never really happened. We had been at odds a lot. So I was like, this is my year. And I started that little speech. And then he kind of cut me short. He was like, we're just talking about what we want to do next year. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm about to say that. And he just said, I think it's probably about time that you move on. Mm. And I was like, oof. Like, you know, just when you hear that, and it's done in a very respectful way. He said it. I had had a knee injury, all the things. He was like, your body's probably given out. You're emotionally tapped out. I think it's probably best that you move on. And we love you. And let's end on a good note. You know, that's kind of how he said it. Like, let's not let this sweetness in our mouth go to waste. And let's say adieu. And so my stomach just turned upside down. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I'll go. So I didn't say anything after that comment. I didn't fight for it. I kind of was like, well, if he doesn't want me, I don't want to be here. You know, it's kind of lonely here. And without the support of the head coach and just gung-ho wanting me in the program, I didn't really want to be there. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll move on. I'm going to go play somewhere else.
That had to be so hard to swallow after the vindication. Like, your senior season showed what you are capable of, what in your heart you probably believed from the moment you set foot on campus. You're performing up to your level of expectation.
Right.
And yes, to have that contribute to an undefeated season and a national championship and then be told, thanks, but we're not interested in it anymore.
Yeah.
What were those days to follow like for you? Were you just laser focused on finding a new home, or was there anger? Was there resentment? What was your mental approach to moving on from that setback?
Right. Well, to be totally honest, it probably wasn't the most mature response in my own heart. I left the office feeling just gut punched, and I was like, oh, that's great to feel wanted. Thanks a lot, man. And I just thought it would go differently. So I think I walked away thinking, I'm going to go play somewhere better than y'all. I'm going to go show y'all. You know, that was kind of my reaction. And as embarrassing as that is, I think he wanted me to go away peacefully and in my career and have good memories at the end. And I really did. I really did have good memories and good connections with their coaching staff and stuff. So I think his ideal scenario was, okay, go get a job, pursue your master's, live your life, and come back for the alumni games and cheer on LCU all the time. And I was like, yeah, screw this. Like, so it was not the most mature. I had to get into the transfer portal pretty fast, though, because of just timing and how that worked. So I headed in the next day. I was being so petty. I walked through the coaches' offices so that they could see me walk into the ladies' office that I had to transfer with. But yeah, so I went in there. I got in the transfer portal. And the next, like, I think it was like 5 days. I think I had found a school. It was 5 days of like very intensive, just studying, reading stats, looking at coaches' records, like all sorts of just research on where I wanted to go. And so I didn't have long to sit there and be petty. Yeah. I had to pick up and find a place.
But don't be too hard on yourself. It's not necessarily petty. A competitor wants to compete. And if someone slaps you in the face, I mean, it's human nature. It's the competitor's nature to want to prove why the decision you just made was a mistake. And so you said it yourself. D1, you had that lingering doubt in your mind when you showed up at LCU. Am I a D1 caliber basketball player?
Right.
And you went D2 and achieved the highest level that you could achieve there. Now you've got a chance to prove to yourself and everybody else that you did have what it took. So you end up at Abilene Christian, D1. You get to see a little bit into the inside of how the upper echelon of athletics works. I mean, it's not an SEC school, but it's definitely not an NAIA or Division II school. Mm-hmm. What was that season like for you? Were there regrets that you hadn't been there all along, or were you just thankful for the journey that you'd had?
Yeah, I would say, as a very immature Christian that I am, it was probably the most mature thing for me to be here. I still live in Abilene, actually. So to move here was a really sweet, sweet thing for me. I immersed myself in all sorts of different people. The program was very different. The culture was very different. Even the playing style was different, but I jumped with 2 feet in. It was fun for me to learn something new. They all would call me grandma because I baked for them. They would come over and have cookies, and I would do Bible studies, and any other time, you know, they're going out on the town. But when you go to grandma's house, you get a cookie and some milk. And so it was super sweet for me to kind of have a clean slate. Like, they don't know my past, they don't, good or bad, you know, and I'm just able to love on some people. And as the fifth year, I'm older than everybody. It was a really sweet dynamic of being able to mentor and love on. As far as on the court, I think it was interesting going from one culture that was pretty controlling, pretty high demanding, you know, structured to the T, to one that's very pretty structured, but in a whole different way. It was interesting, but it was good and sweet. And I really had no regrets. It was just like, this is a good way to go out. Like, it felt at peace by the time season was over.
So it was a fitting end to a really successful career. And so at that point, you've been able to kind of go out on your own terms. You have a chance to put a bow on this basketball career. For a lot of athletes, the day after whatever that last game was, or sometimes it's, for me, I'll never forget it, when I actually went to like a rodeo and I heard the horn of the bull riding buzzer and it sounded just like the arena. And I got goosebumps. I'm like, I'll never hear that horn and step on the floor again as an athlete. That identity that's so tied up into this thing that you've invested your life into is suddenly kind of ripped away. And, you know, talk me through what that identity has been for you. What role does basketball play in who Emma is today?
Good question. So I have gone through the ringer with the identity thing. It was my whole identity and I felt terrible about it. And then it was my whole identity and I felt great about it. And then I think that at ACU, my last year, I got over that and I felt pretty good about like, okay, this isn't my identity. You know, I came in thinking I was going to start and then I didn't. And then it didn't really wreck me. You know, it was just like, okay, well, keep trucking and you'll find your stats. And I did. And it was good. But I think I got full of it in that way of feeling like, oh, now I'm a mature person. My identity's not wrapped up in my sport. And then after it all ended, I'm still figuring out stuff. Like 2 years out, I'm like, oof. Like even I just took the dog on a walk the other day and just like lacing up my straps. Like you said, the horn. I was just like, oh. And it makes me feel just like, oh man, like where's my worth? What am I doing? I'm such a joke out here, just taking my dog on a walk, lacing up my shoelaces. And I'm thinking about all the times that I laced up my shoelaces and I was actually doing something worthwhile or whatever. And now I'm trying to figure out, and I still definitely am. This was like a week ago of, okay, well, just cause I'm not about to go tip off doesn't mean I'm not doing something worthwhile. This dog needs to get walked or whatever, you know, that I'm doing is still worthwhile. So I'm definitely still growing through that. I thought I had it, but obviously I don't.
Yeah. Sister, sometimes it will bubble up in the most unexpected ways. So,
yeah.
Well, it's been said that failure can teach us far more than success ever could have. And I think it's safe to say that your journey through even high school and college athletics didn't go according to the way you might have scripted it. It took some detours. It went some directions you wouldn't have picked. What did failure teach you that success probably wouldn't have?
That's good. Honestly, okay, let me process this. I think that failure is a term that can be taken in a couple different ways. What is failure, right? I think there are several times in my athletic career that I failed. I'm doing hand quotes. I know you can't see that, air quotes. You know, I failed. I had a terrible game. I just gave up, or I had a bad attitude, or I didn't come through for my teammates or something. And I learned good things from that, like humility and perseverance and stuff. But for me, I think the most growth that I've had through failure was my failure socially and relationally. When I broke it off with my dear friends that were pointing me towards Christ, and I'm like, screw you guys. You know, that's failure. That is probably more failure than I've ever had as a person. And trust me, that says a lot because I've had a lot of failures in different ways. But that choice to end a good thing that's pointing me towards the Lord, or the choice to end a ministry opportunity for someone, just to throw people to the side and say, you know what, I'm going to do me. I'm going to pursue what I want. I'm a very competitive person, so it's easy for me to do that. And I'm a people pleaser. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not pleasing you. You're not pleasing me. I don't need you in my life. Like, see ya, sucker. And so those failures, hindsight, looking back, I'm like, I have learned so much in the moment, and now I'm still learning from those of like, dang, that's the real stuff.
Yeah,
failing to get an extra rebound, that's real, and that teaches you a lot. But failing to follow through with your friends, or to hold true to loyalty, or you know, just loving on somebody when they need you, that's real failure. And I think I've grown a lot more through that than anything.
Yeah, that's a valuable perspective. So you finish your career at LCU, you go to Abilene Christian, you started work on a master's degree, and I'm always keeping tabs on you through your dad, through our conversations at church, like a fan from afar. Nice. And he's like, yeah, you know, she's not really dating. She's not really. And then all of a sudden you're married, like out of nowhere. So talk to me about the whirlwind that was your courtship and now marriage.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. That's pretty much how it happened. What you said is the whole story. I was so like, not trying to get with the guy. I was like, you know, I was not into it. I don't know why. Because I had a bunch of boyfriends in the past and kind of liked the security that gave me and stuff. And at that time in my life, that whole summer, I was like, nope, I am working 3 jobs. I am making some money. I'm saving some money. I'm volunteering at church and all the things. And I don't have any need for a guy. I'm a self-sufficient woman. So that's where I was at. And then the Lord was like, here, volunteer, quit volunteering in the nursery and volunteer in youth group. And I was like, okay, great. I love it. I'm a 13-year-old sister. This will bring me back to being around them. So I was like, jumped into that with 2 feet. And I felt very much called and affirmed in that. And so I started volunteering in the youth group. And my church is awesome. They vet you and stuff before you become a member. They vet you before you start volunteering in a place. So I went through the whole vetting process and everything. And finally got to serve in the youth group. And my first day in there, I'm like, who is that guy? So there was this tall black guy, looked like an athlete. He was in there just messing around with these little 13-year-old boys and playing games with them. And he's loud and goofy and all the character. And I'm like, okay, that's attractive to me. But it just kind of took me by surprise. And lo and behold, like literally a week later, I see him in a coffee shop. I grab his number. I'm like, hey, man, you work in the youth group. I met you. Here's my number. I'm like being super forward. And then he took that and ran with it. And he asked me on a date like the next week. We started talking seriously. And we both, I mean, he's 30, I'm 25. And we're like, look, I don't really want to waste time. I not to get on to the next person, but just because, like, why get invested with somebody if it's for nothing? And so we were both on the same page. We were like, yeah, no, I agree. And we've really intentionally dated for probably, I mean, October. And then we were engaged in November. So yeah, like 2 months. And then we're like, okay, we're engaged. Let's get married. And mom and dad are like, okay, next year, maybe spring, summer, fall. And we're like, nope, December. So we probably put our parents through the ringer on that. Flew his family out from Florida. We're like, we got to get flights now. Come on. So that's pretty much how we did it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's a familiar tale. Someday Christy and I will share our story. It's pretty similar.
Oh, really? I love that. It's a good one.
Yeah. So if you had the chance to go back and speak some words of wisdom into young Emma, and to prepare her for the ups and the downs that she is going to encounter, tell me what age you would speak to and what would you say to her?
Wow. I mean, I think the younger, the better. I think my issues started early. I mean, probably everybody's does, but my insecurities and my people pleasing tendencies and even my extreme competitive nature, it's all relational. And I think I would have liked to go back and talk to me at like 15 or 13, probably 10, just go for 10. I think pretty early on, I started forming this idea of I have to supply something, whether it's the humor of the conversation or the buckets in the game or the respectfulness in an adult conversation or whatever. Like, I tried my best to put my best leg forward and everything, not for the sake of doing the right thing, but just for the sake of people pleasing and being the best conversationalist, the best girlfriend, the best sister, the best whatever. And so I think I would go back to my 10-year-old self and tell her, you know what? Your value is not in what you do. Your value is not in what you produce, what your hands can do, what your mouth can do, what your brain can do. It's literally not. You yeah. can't possibly do enough good things to gain the rewards in heaven that you want. That's the ultimate reward, and you can't do it. That's not possible. And just to remind myself, like, it's okay to mess up. It's okay to have a jumble sometimes.
It's beautiful. I don't have the benefit of seeing you, but you can see me, and I'm getting a little welled up here. I got some West Texas dust in my eye as you're talking. It's powerful. I think all too often sports can be such a powerful tool to help us gain confidence, but it's not very far to keep moving down that path, and it becomes the source of our worth. And misplaced very often, where we think that in order for someone to care about me or to value me, and it's not just sports, everybody has a thing, whether it's the arts, whether it's being good in school.
Yeah.
It's so easy to turn something that's good on its face into an idol and something that becomes positioned where it ought not be. All right, let's change gears. We're getting a little too heavy here. I love music and I love the emotions that it can represent. I can tell you something without saying a word just by sending you a link to a song that touched me. What song would you pick as the soundtrack to a montage of your life?
Oh, dang. And why? Okay, let's think here. I am not good at questions like this. You put me on the spot and then I blink. I'm like, what is music? I don't know. Let's see.
Maybe think about your pregame playlist, something that really mattered.
Honestly, I played all worship music for my pregame playlist because I would play it in my ears and then we'd get on the bus and hear all these raunchy, crazy things. And so I needed to fill my heart with a little bit of Jesus before I'd enter that, which I totally participated in, of course, and got hyped to those music too. In high school, I would listen to Elevation Worship and that was my jam before worshiping the Lord. I would get on my Jesus music before games.
All good. Well, Emma, it's been a heck of a ride. What for you remains undone?
I feel like everything. I feel like I'm a work in progress, let me tell you. I just think, yes, I've had a journey in the academics, the athletics, the relational, just all the things, but I don't know. I just feel like I'm so naive to so many good things that the Lord has for me and realizations and wisdom and understanding of who God is and who am I and what does that even mean in regards to what I should do with myself. So I think in simple terms, I want to have kids and learn about what motherhood looks like and understand more about self-sacrifice. But in general terms, everything. I want to be a better wife. I want to be a better person. I want to be a better disciple to the Lord. And I just feel like everything remains undone until we enter the gates. I'm just a work in progress.
Yeah. Well, I love that. Any of your ACU Wildcat teammates who are listening, Grandma wants to be a mom. So you're doing it out of order, but you're still doing it, right?
They'll have some siblings. It'll be great.
So, Emma, we really appreciate you dropping by the show. Thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate the conversation. Thanks again. Yes,
absolutely. I am Emma Morris, and I am undone. Thanks for having me.
I'm thankful to Emma for giving of her time today and sharing her journey, and I hope you found as much inspiration from this episode as I did. For more information on it, be sure to check it out on the web. Simply go to undonepodcast.com/EP58 to see the notes, links, and images related to today's guest, Emma Middleton Morris. If you're listening, I've got a question for you, and I want to hear your answer.
Emma was ready to stay at LCU, but that door closed on her. I'd like to hear you recall a time when, like Emma, you had to change directions and go somewhere new in order to finish what you knew in your heart was left undone. Go to the Undone Podcast Facebook or Instagram pages where you'll see posts with artwork from this episode along with this question and weigh in. Coming up, I've got Australian nonprofit founder Ian Westmoreland, pro baseball athletic trainer Phil Milan, and entrepreneur Nick Hutchison. So stay tuned. This and more coming up on Becoming Undone. Becoming Undone is a Nitro Hype creative production written and produced by me, Toby Brooks. If you or someone you know has a story of resilience and victory to share for Becoming Undone, please contact me at undonepodcast.com. Follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Becoming Undone Pod. And follow me at Toby J. Brooks on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Listen, subscribe, and please leave me a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening and for all your support. Until next time, everybody, keep getting better.